If you dig the twisted, admire the outlandish, and are enamored by the unusual, you're in the right place. True crime, the supernatural, the unexplained, now you're speaking our language. If you agree, join us as we dive into the darker side. You know, because it's more fun over here. Welcome to Total Conundrum.
Warning, some listeners may find the following content disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey there, Conundrum crew. Buckle up and brace your ears because you're tuning in to another episode of Total Conundrum, where we dive deep into the chilling waters of true crime. Today's journey takes us into the darkest depths of a tale so twisted, it might just make your skin crawl.
Sure, Jeremy. We're shining a spotlight on a man who was an ordinary suburban resident by day and a monstrous clown-faced predator by night. Gather round as we unravel the sinister saga of John Wayne Gacy, also infamously known as the Killer Clown.
Brace yourselves, Conundrum crew. This is one episode you definitely won't want to miss.
That's right, folks. Imagine a guy who could flip from being your friendly neighborhood party clown to one of America's most horrifying serial killers. It's the kind of switch that could give anyone whiplash. Today, we're peeling back the layers of Gacy's double life, the one he lived and the one he hid so well until he couldn't.
Before we creep down that dark path, remember to hit that like and subscribe button, leave us a review on Apple and Spotify, and don't forget to ring that notification bell on YouTube so you're always in the loop with our latest episodes. Your support keeps us going. If you have any story ideas or recommendations, contact us at totalconundrum.com, or you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter.
And because we love keeping you both horrified and entertained, stick around till the end. We've got some trailers from our podcast pals at Twisted Karma Podcast and the Paranormal Lovers Podcast. If you thought we were at the end of your creepy podcast journey, think again.
We'll be back after these messages.
Are you ready for a little good karma with a twisted edge? This is Twisted Karma. Where best friends, Tara and Mara, a pair of caffeine-fueled moms, dive headfirst into the darkest corners of true crime, the paranormal, and urban legends. I'm Tara, and I do the deep dives, bringing you the facts, the research, and the haunting details, while my ride-or-die Mara brings the razzle-dazzle with sharp wit, unfiltered commentary, and just the right amount of sass to keep things twisted. We honor the victims, roast the criminals, and shine a light on stories that need to be told. From spine-chilling hauntings to jaw-dropping true crime cases, no stone goes unturned, no ghost gets left behind, and no criminal escapes a well-deserved verbal smackdown. So grab your sage, your snacks, and your sense of justice, because karma, she's a little twisted. Twisted Karma, with Tara and Mara, honoring the victims, calling out the darkness, and finding the humor, even when the story hits its darkest point. New episodes every week, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And back to the show.
Strap in, crew, as we kick off this eerie expedition into John Wayne Gacy's early antics. Picture this. His childhood wasn't just bad. It was the kind of horror story that would leave even Stephen King locking his doors.
You bet, Jeremy. This guy's early days weren't under any big top, but sure played out like a three-ring circus of nightmares. Born in Chicago in the 40s, Gacy's relationship with his dad was more twisted than a pretzel. His old man confused abuse with affection in ways that would even have Freud needing a stiff drink.
You're not kidding, Tracy. Gacy's dad was less about playing catch in the backyard and more about catching a beating with a belt. Talk about dad of the year. His dad would have taken the trophy for most likely to demolish your self-esteem. He used to call Gacy dumb and stupid and a sickly little bookworm.
It's hitting him where it hurts, Jeremy. And imagine this. The poor kid's trying to connect with his dad, maybe hoping for a good job, son. Instead, what he gets? A leather belt special for messing up. It's like every childhood mistake he made was a reason to get a beating.
And the cherry on top? His dad slapping the sissy and mama boy labels on him whenever his mom would try to step in and help. You know, his dad was claiming he'd grew up queer because he was close to his mom.
That's not tough love. That's just tough luck. And hey, let's play a little hypothetical. Would you rather have a queer son or a clown psycho mass murderer son?
Seriously, that's a no-brainer. Speaking of a twisted family, did you know when Gacy was just 7, he got molested by a family friend? And he couldn't even tell his family because he'd probably get a beating.
That is terrible. Poor kid couldn't catch a break. At school, he wasn't winning any popularity contests either. Thanks to a heart condition, he struggled to play outside, do any sports, and struggled to make friends. At school, he was basically a bench warmer. Well, more of a bench sitter since sports were out. Talk about irony, considering later on, he'd really take people out of the game. But let's not jump ahead.
Correct. And it wasn't just the bench he was warming. He was packing on the pounds too, which of course made him the favorite target of every school bully. Little did the bullies know, they were basically fueling the future Clown College revenge tour, where the pranks were less about squirting flowers and more about, well, let's just say you didn't want to be a part of his act.
And talk about a rough childhood. Following his heart condition, he was hospitalized for months with these mysterious blackouts. His dad, ever the supportive figure, tells everyone the kid is a liar and just doesn't want to go to school. Ladies and gents, presenting John Gacy, faking it for sympathy.
No kidding. There he was, surrounded by doctors, probably hooked up to more machines than a NASA launch. And his dad's like, quit your acting, son. You're not fooling anyone.
And after all that medical drama, they finally find out it was a blood clot in his brain. Who would have thought? Certainly not his dad, who seemed to think doctor visits were just another way to rack up sympathy points.
You'd think surviving that would earn him a break, but nope, not in the Gacy household. Instead, it's more beatings because why not? The dad probably thought the beatings would knock the clot loose or something.
Undoubtedly. And after all that drama, catching up at school was like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube in the dark. So he drops out of high school and boom, it's like he's living out his dad's predictions.
Man, if Gacy's dad thought dropping out was the low point, just wait till you hear about the Las Vegas road trip. The apple didn't just fall far from the tree. It took a nosedive into the Grand Canyon of terrible life choices.
No doubt. Fed up of the abuse, with a whopping $136 in his pocket, Gacy left home without saying goodbye and drove up to the glamour of fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. But instead of hitting the jackpot or impersonating Elvis, Gacy ends up working in a mortuary. Talk about upgrading your resume.
That's right, Tracy. From the bright lights of Vegas to embalming fluids, our guy went from a game of roulette to chilling with the dearly departed. And get this, he wasn't just around the bodies. He slept right behind the embalming room. Talk about living the dream, or, well, the nightmare.
Seriously, who needs a horror movie when you can live in one? Most of us dread even going to a funeral, and here's Gacy catching Z's next to the embalmed bodies. Guess it was the only place quiet enough.
Absolutely. You're guaranteed a good night's sleep. Plus, how about that plot twist? From high school dropout to Las Vegas mortuary sleeper. It's like he was auditioning for the most gothic version of The Hangover.
Right? Nothing screams escaping parental disappointment like sleeping behind a morgue. And the worst part, later on, he confessed to climbing into one of the coffins and sleeping with the bodies. I mean, if he was trying to put distance between him and his father's expectations, I'd say mission creepily accomplished.
So after turning the creepy factor up to full blast in Vegas, Gacy somehow, almost miraculously, pulls his life together. We're talking about a full-on redemption arc. He has a steady job, meets his sweetheart, ties the knot, and even welcomes a new baby into the world.
Indeed, Jeremy. It's like he's starring in his own feel-good comeback movie. 4 months after becoming a dad, He drives back home, newborn in tow, for the ultimate family reunion. And here's the sweet part. His father, the man who made Darth Vader look like a candidate for Father of the Year, actually tells him, "I'm proud of you. And I was wrong about you." I mean, talk about an emotional plot twist.
Seriously, Tracy, that's the kind of heartwarming scene that would make the Grinch's heart grow three sizes. His dad even apologized for all the abuse and said it should have never happened. Gacy's got it all now. The job, the family, and that golden nugget of paternal approval he's been craving his entire life. He even has another baby on the way, a beautiful girl.
But does he bask in this newfound familial bliss? Organize an overdue father-son fishing trip? Maybe throw a couple of beers in a cooler? Nope, not our guy Gacy. Just when you think he's going to settle into his role as a doting dad and redeemed son, he goes off script big time.
Yep, in classic thriller movie fashion, Gacy doesn't just fall off the wagon. He does a spectacular somersault right off it. That very year, he sexually assaulted several young teenage boys. And just like that, his perfect life screenplay gets a tragic rewrite. Gacy's sentenced to 10 years behind bars.
Talk about family drama turning into courtroom drama. The same day he's sentenced, his wife files for divorce. She's not just checking out of the marriage. She's taking the house, the kids, the alimony, and pretty much everything but the kitchen sink. And the court gives her everything she asks for.
And the real gut punch? Gacy never sees his wife or his children again. From family reunions to total isolation, his life could have been a Shakespeare play if Shakespeare was more into rodeo clowns than Romeo and Juliet.
Exactly, Jeremy. Just when you think there's going to be a happy ending, the script flips. And you're left wondering, what the hell just happened? Life had given Gacy a second chance, a clean slate. And just like that, he ruined it.
So Gacy lands himself a decade-long sentence in the Ohio State Men's Reformatory for sexual assault. But guess what? They only make him serve 18 months. Talk about a fast-forward release. Must have been the director's cut version of justice.
It's terrible, Jeremy. You just wonder, if he had served the full 10 years, would he have gone on to commit the horrors he did? During his brief stint behind bars, Gacy turned into the poster boy for model inmates. He started as just another guy in an apron, but quickly worked his way up to head cook.
And he was all about the perks, Tracy. He managed to get the inmates' daily pay in the mess hall bumped up, and even spearheaded a few projects to spruce up the place, like installing a miniature golf course. Yeah, you heard that right. A putt-putt course behind bars. By February 1970, his efforts got him a Distinguished Service Award. Talk about a hustler in orange.
From underdog to overachiever, that's Gacy for you. His first shot at parole was in June 1969, and it was a no-go. But Gacy wasn't about to let that hold him back. By the next parole hearing in May 70, he bagged his high school diploma, knocking out 16 different courses from behind bars. Come June 18th, 1970, they set him loose with a curfew and a ticket back to Chicago to crash with his mom.
A buddy picked him up from the slammer. Gacy's parting words, "I'll never go back to jail." Spoiler alert, well, I'm not going to ruin it for you. So he was back in the game, slinging bacon as a chef, from running the kitchen in jail to frying up breakfast in Chicago. Gacy was flipping more than just pancakes. He was trying to flip his fate.
True. He hit the ground running, or should we say cooking. But spoiler or not, Gacy's story isn't quite the feel-good turnaround you'd hope for. Even though he was flipping burgers and trying to cook up a new life, some old habits, unfortunately, don't land sunny side up.
Without question, and just when you think he might be redeemed, the darker side of Gacy rears its ugly head again. Within a year, he's back in hot water, this time accused again of sexually assaulting two teenagers. But despite the serious allegations, charges were never filed, and the case just kind of disappeared. He never faces any consequences for his actions.
Talk about a twist of fate, right? On October 18th, 1971, Gacy's parole wraps up, and just like magic, a month later, all his past criminal records in Iowa get sealed. Poof, It's like a slate is wiped cleaner than my dinner plate at a buffet.
With his record sealed, Gacy's practically invisible to the weary eyes of the law in Chicago. It's like being handed a golden ticket to the Wonka Factory of Freedom, except what he's cooking up is more sinister than sweet.
Oh, it gets bitter, all right. Fast forward a year, and Gacy's not just lying low. He starts what would become his most infamous killing spree, from sealing records to sealing fates. Our guy shifts gears into a whole new level of horror.
Although the killing started in 1972, it wasn't until 1975 Gacy took a bizarre turn in an already twisted journey. This is where he steps into the oversized shoes of his alter egos, Pogo the Clown and Patches the Clown. Talk about a creepy career pivot.
Without doubt, Jeremy. He crafts these characters from scratch, makeup and all. Pogo, he's the cheerful one, probably the guy you'd want to have at your kid's birthday party, if you didn't know better. Then there's Patches, a mean clown who's all business. He's like the one at the bank who tells you your loan's been denied.
We'll be back after these messages.
Do you ever get that strange feeling at night that you're being watched?
Or maybe you heard a noise in the woods you can't explain.
What is the truth about UFOs? And where are the ones that have crashed?
Every week, join husband and wife duo, Felicia and Ian, as we seek the truth. Recording in the mountains of the Appalachians, we, the paranormal lovers, will bring you stories of hauntings, cryptids, UFOs, and more.
You can find us on iHeart, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most other podcast services. Follow us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for The Paranormal Lovers in the search bar.
And back to the show.
Gacy claimed slipping into those clown costumes led him regress back into childhood. He's prancing around at political fundraisers and children's hospitals, juggling more than just balloons.
Yes. And while he's painting smiles at charity events, he's secretly the star of a real-life horror show. This chilling double life earns him the infamous nickname Killer Clown. Not exactly the title you want popping up next to your name on caller ID.
Yeah, Gacy was living out some twisted version of a superhero story. Pogo by day, predator by night.
Speaking of interesting career choices, if there was a home reno show called Crawl Space Nightmares, Gacy might have been their star presenter, but instead of renovating, he was about redecorating with a murderous touch.
Just a touch, Tracy. Gacy's home in Norwood Park seemed normal enough from the outside. A nice, tidy suburban home, perfect for a family, or so you would think. But beyond that white picket fence was a dark, hidden layer where nightmares were all too real.
Starting in 1972, Gacy used his home for the most sinister purposes. His crawl space became his personal graveyard. Over the years, he buried 29 young men and boys under his house. It's like he was trying for a morbid world record or something. But let's talk about how Gacy got these guys to his house in the first place. He had a method, a really twisted one. He'd lure his victims with promises, jobs, money, even just a car ride. Sometimes it was the offer of a magical night with beers and magic tricks, because who could say no to magic with Pogo?
Right? Those magic tricks turned into tragic tricks pretty quick. Once Gacy had them in his house, that's when the real nightmare began. He'd overpower his victims, handcuff them, waterboard them, burn them, and even had a collection of medieval torture devices.
Talk about a disappearing act. And his infamous rope trick? That was no Houdini act. It was much darker. He would tell his victims, "This is my final act, the rope trick." And then he would strangle his victims with rope, adding an appalling twist to what was already unimaginable.
It's chilling how premeditated it all was. He even had a routine and tools ready, like he was setting up for a clown workshop every time a guest came over.
Oh, and let's not forget how he managed to keep his horror show a secret for so long. Gacy would use quicklime to hasten the decomposition of the bodies. That's not a spice you want in your recipe, folks. He turned his crawl space into kind of a grotesque key lime pie.
And to think, the first time he killed, it was like an epiphany for him. He said he had a mind-numbing orgasm and declared, "That's when I realized that death was the ultimate thrill. I mean, a rampant rabbit would do the trick, but who am I to judge?"
Talk about a midlife crisis. Some people get motorcycles, and others become killer clowns. It's all about balance. Gacy didn't stop there with hiding them. He stuffed rags in the victim's underwear or socks in their mouth to stifle their last breaths. And through it all, the screams that should have raised alarms were just dismissed as strange noises by neighbors, too scared or uncaring to act.
And you know, some victims he didn't kill outright. It was like he relished the power over them. There was a teenage boy in 77, and Gacy turned a night of torture into a sick game. Whilst raping, torturing, and waterboarding him, Gacy would repeat, "Aren't we playing fun games tonight?" I tell you what, you wouldn't want to hand him the go straight to jail card in Monopoly. The victim was in so much pain, he asked Gacy to kill him. Gacy replied, "I'm getting around to that." Bizarrely, rather than killing him, Gacy dropped him off at work the next day, warning him the cops would never believe him.
Well, he was right. The boy, Robert Donnelly, went to the cops, who spoke to Gacy and didn't press charges. Then there's the case of Jeffrey Rignall in March 78. Gacy drugged him, restrained his head and hands in homemade wooden stocks, you know, like the medieval days, and went full Game of Thrones on him, including burning him repeatedly. Surviving that nightmare, Rignall was just dumped in a park, alive but broken. Rignall did go to the police and told them everything, but Gacy was only charged with battery. No consequences, no jail time, nothing. I mean, come on!
I can't believe it. Later, when Gacy's crimes had come to light, Rignall would say, "I'm just thankful I woke up in a park instead of underneath his house." You know, by the time they charged Gacy with battery, Gacy's crawl space was already too full for any more bodies. Literally, the police would have been standing right on top of a crypt, and they wouldn't even know it. Gacy said he thought about dumping bodies in the attic, but worried about leakages, as if that was the least of his problems. So he switched to dumping bodies in the Des Plaines River. 5 went in, but only 4 were found. It's horrifying.
And through it all, Gacy's chumming up with the cops, taunting them, going for cocktails and fancy dinners. And if that doesn't send chills down your spine, I don't know what will.
Absolutely, Tracy. By the end of 78, Gacy was practically on a first-name basis with the law. He'd invite detectives out for meals, casually chatting over dinner and drinks, as if they were old college buddies catching up.
And he didn't stop at just sharing a meal. Gacy would throw out accusations, claiming the cops were only on his back because of his political ties or because they disapproved of his gay lifestyle, which, to be honest, may have been the only reason why they never believed the surviving victims.
The audacity is real. I mean, he'd purposely go speeding or park illegally in front of police cars, daring them to catch him. He felt invincible.
Then came the breakfast that would make your stomach turn. And not because of the one-star Yelp reviews. There they were, sitting in a public restaurant, and Gacy, ever the showman, is holding court talking about his business ventures, failed marriages, and yes, his clowning around. And then he drops the chilling line, almost casually, saying, "You know, clowns can get away with murder." As if he's cracking a dark joke, except we all know it's not just a punchline, it's his reality.
It really illustrates the twisted double game Gacy played, publicly playing the clown while privately mastering the role of predator. Those interactions with the police were part of his dangerous charade, keeping everyone guessing while he hid his gruesome secrets in plain sight. So Gacy's there, literally joking over breakfast about getting away with murder. Think about that, over eggs and coffee. This guy hints he's a killer clown in real life.
Yeah, and the sheer stress of it all was finally showing. Gacy's looking disheveled, unshaven, looking like he's been on a bender. And honestly, he kind of was. He was boozing hard. Like he's trying to drown his guilt or something. And just 2 days after his breakfast confessional, he's back at his lawyer's, looking like he just crawled out of a dumpster. He's all anxious and asking for whiskey straight away.
And it's there, with a strong drink in hand, that Gacy decides it's confession time. It's like a dam breaks and the truth comes flooding out. He starts off stating, I've been the judge, jury, and yes, executioner to many, many people. And now he figured it's his turn to face the music.
Totally unravels. Goes on about how these weren't just random folks. They were people he felt he owned, like properties, because they were male prostitutes, hustlers, or just liars. It's dark, Jeremy, the way he just disconnected from the reality of their humanity.
And mid-confession, guess what? The guy passes out, drunk, right there. His lawyers, freaking out, scheduled him a psych appointment for the next morning. But Gacy, he eventually wakes up, brushes off his own confession like it's some bad dream, and says he's got to run errands. You know, Costco waits for no man.
Like he's planning a goodbye tour or something. He packs up all of his drugs, goes on a road trip, handing out weed and pills like they're party favors to random strangers, saying, the end is coming for me. Then he breaks down in tears at a friend's house, confesses again, saying, I've been a bad boy. I killed 30 people, give or take a few, just casually.
His next stop, legal meetings, cemeteries to say goodbye to dead relatives, just tying up those loose ends. And get this, highway cameras got him on tape. As he was driving, he was holding his rosary to his face, praying the whole time. And as this is all going on, cops are drafting up search warrants because now they know. They've got to stop this guy before he does something drastic to himself or someone else.
They get to his house, and what do they find? Before he had left, Gacy had unplugged the water pump in the basement. The crawl space flooded. Classic Gacy trying to wash away his sins. But the cops aren't having it. They don their rain gear, drain the water, dive into the now liquid lime, and it doesn't take long. They hit the jackpot. Well, worse than that, they dived right into a limey slush-filled area with decomposing bodies. One of them literally yells out, oh my God, this place is full of kids. Suddenly, it's all real. Every horrifying story Gacy confessed to in his lawyer's office, right there beneath the floorboards of that disturbingly normal-looking house.
And just like that, Gacy's grim show was over. No more creepy clown performances, no more twisted magic tricks, just cold, hard reality as he faced charges for what would be one of the most gruesome chapters in criminal history.
Seriously, it's a story that reminds you that the scariest monsters are the ones that don't look the part. They're not hiding under your bed. Sometimes they're hiding behind a smile, a clown mask, or a neighborly wave. Stay with us as we dig into the trials and the media circus.
Let's roll up our sleeves and dive into the media frenzy that became almost as infamous as the crimes themselves. When Gacy was finally caught and his horrifying acts came to light, it was the biggest story of the decade.
Oh, for sure. The press was all over it. Every detail of Gacy's life and crimes was dissected and displayed. His mugshot alone might have given half the country nightmares, but it was his day in court that really turned the media circus into a full-blown fire festival.
No doubt about it. The trial itself was a spectacle. Gacy pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. He tried to convince the jury that the 33 young men fallen underneath the house were planted there, like he was some kind of twisted gardener. The public ate up every moment of the trial. People were torn between wanting justice for the victims and the morbid curiosity about Gacy. This character, who seemed straight out of a slasher film, could exist in real life.
The public's reaction was a mix of horror, fascination, and an overwhelming need for justice. The courtroom was packed every day, filled with families of the victims seeking closure and just plain gawkers drawn by the grim spectacle. Well, they got what they were looking for. Many spectators were vomiting and fainting during the trial due to the gory details.
And as the trial progressed, it became clear just how manipulative Gacy was. He tried every trick in the book to sway the jury. His testimony was a masterclass in deflection and denial. He painted himself as the victim, a successful businessman who was misunderstood and framed by his political enemies.
If there was an Oscar for the most dramatic performance in the courtroom, Gacy would have won, hands down. But But despite his efforts, the evidence was overwhelming. The jury saw right through his act. The testimonies from forensic experts, the gruesome photos of the crawl space, and the heartbreaking stories from the families of the victims painted a clear and horrifying picture of the real John Wayne Gacy.
After what must have seemed like an eternity for the families involved, the verdict was in. Gacy was found guilty on all counts and sentenced to death. It was a small relief for the families who had endured unimaginable pain.
His conviction didn't put an end to the media circus, though. If anything, it intensified. Books, documentaries, and endless analysis followed. Gacy might have been sentenced to death, but his dark legacy lived on, feeding the public's never-ending fascination with the mind of a killer.
Speaking of minds, let's dive into the twisted psyche of John Wayne Gacy. It's time to unpack what the psychological experts found when they took a stroll through his mental landscape. Spoiler alert, it's not a walk in the park.
Oh, definitely not, Jeremy. It's more like a walk in a haunted house. Gacy's psychological evaluations revealed a man who was as complex as he was cruel. Diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, he was a textbook example of a psychopath lacking empathy and manipulating others without a hint of remorse.
Yeah, and add that to the cocktail, a heavy dose of narcissism. Gacy saw himself as the victim, the misunderstood genius. He thought he was smarter than everyone else, including his lawyers, the jury, and those psychologists trying to look into his brain.
Let's not forget his most chilling role, Pogo the Clown. This alter ego wasn't just a party trick. It was a calculated mask that allowed Gacy to gain trust and access to his victims, mostly young men and boys whom he lured with promises of magic tricks only to lead them to their gruesome ends.
That's right, Tracy. And this killer clown persona has been replicated throughout pop culture like a bad smell that just keeps coming back. From the Joker and Batman to Pennywise the Clown, books, movies, and even true crime podcasts like ours can't seem to shake the haunting image of the clown who is more Chucky than Chuckle.
Makes you think twice about hiring entertainment for your kid's birthday party, doesn't it? I mean, do clown colleges even have background checks? Because if not, I think I just found a gap in the market for a new business venture. Background checked clowns.
Patent that idea, Tracy. Quick. But seriously, Gacy's dual persona as a respected community member by day and a predatory monster by night challenges society's idea of normalcy. How many times have we heard the neighbors say, "He seemed like such a nice guy"?
Exactly, Jeremy. It's that contrast between his public face and his private horrors that fascinates and terrifies us. Gacy's legacy is a cautionary tale about the masks people wear and the darkness that can lurk behind a friendly smile or a painted face.
So as we pull down the curtains on this episode, it's clear that Gacy's influence on both psychological studies and pop culture remains alive and kicking. His case continues to be a dark mirror showing us the complexities of human psychology and the masks we all wear. And that wraps up another deep dive into the chilling world of John Wayne Gacy on this episode of Total Conundrum. It's been a haunted journey through the mind of the killer clown and the shadow he casts over American crime history.
Thanks for tuning in, Conundrum Crew. Don't forget to follow, rate, and review our podcast on Apple and Spotify. Hit that subscribe button and ring that notification bell on YouTube to make sure you don't miss any of our eerie explorations.
We really appreciate your feedback and engagement. If you have any creepy story ideas or haunting recommendations, drop us a line at totalconundrum.com or catch us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter.
And remember, the conversation doesn't end here. We've got more mysteries to unravel and more dark tales to tell. So, until next time, keep on creeping on. We love you, weirdos.
That's a wrap, Conundrum Crew. Stay safe, stay curious, and as always, thanks for getting, well, more than a little weird with us today. Bye! Thanks for hanging out with us here at Total Conundrum. Please make sure to check out our website and blog at totalconundrum.com for news, upcoming events, merch, bloopers, and additional hysteria. You never know what will pop up, so be sure to follow along. If you want to show your support for Total Conundrum and gain access to all of our bonus content, please visit our Patreon page. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The links are available in our show notes. If you have any questions, comments, recommendations, or stories to share, please email us at contact@totalconundrum.com. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate the love. Keep on creeping on, mother cluckers.